medicine is a cultural constructed thing. Medical facts aren't uncovered. You know, they're made and shaped by different cultural views.
Welcome to Time to Heal, a podcast about hope and healing. My name is Emily Anazelli, and in this episode, I'm talking to Eileen Das about ancient medicine, the idea that medicine is a social construct, her work on Galen, and both ancient and modern gynecology.
So my name is Eileen Das. I am an associate professor of classical studies and Middle East studies at the University of Michigan. I am from North Carolina, but I've traveled a lot, you know, spending time in the Midwest where I've now settled, but also time in the UK where I did my doctoral degree.
I've been much more excited about this interview than I probably should.
No, hey, you know, we need to take our excitement where we can get it.
So, and we met because, or we were connected through the Center for Hellenic Studies, where you were a fellow and I was an intern way back when. This is actually, the Center for Hellenic Studies is probably where I got my start in podcasting, because I had to do a lot of transcription of exit interviews. And it just was fascinating to me. I loved transcribing them and like listening to the different ways that people spoke. So we can just pause and give thanks to CHS.
Yeah. That we're Thank here. You for your Harvard monies. Yeah, exactly. It's just like, that was a blissful pre-COVID time. Yeah. So it's like I seared in my memory of good times. Yeah.
But I asked you to come on the podcast because you study ancient medicine. So I guess for anyone, for all the listeners who aren't like up to snuff on ancient medicine, can you just give us like a little snippet of like what you study and like what your focus is about?
Absolutely. And I should say that I define ancient medicine quite capaciously. I use that when I'm teaching, I teach a course on ancient medicine. In this, what I consider is ancient medicine, anywhere from ancient Mesopotamia, so talking about Ur and Babylonia and Assyria, including ancient Egypt, Greco-Roman antiquity. And I even push it into what we refer to as the Middle Ages, the medieval period, so looking at the Islamic world. And so I'm really interested in the way that the body is theorized, so how different ancient thinkers believe that the body was related to the cosmos, how the body was thought to differ from other types of creatures, whether human, plant, animal, or mineral, and also how do you conceptualize disease? So thinking about what counts as a disease and what counts as health, and how different doctors in these different cultures are conceptualizing the body and the way that they're treating it, and how different disease agents in these cultures. So I'm thinking particularly about my unit in my class on ancient Mesopotamia, where it's not only so-called natural causes, where you might have excess of different humors or indigestion, but also the belief that the divine can have an impact on your health, demons or gods. So religious offenses causing physical illness. So really looking about in these different pre-modern societies, how different cultural practices, religion, even social practices that affect the lives of women and men in antiquity influence the conception of health, well-being, disease, and the body.
I just want to know the answer. I want to know all of that. Yes, I want to take this class.
Yeah.
So I sent you questions that were focused on Galen because
yes,
that was my understanding. But if there is like a different, we don't have to just stick to Galen, or if there's like a different focus that you want to talk about, we can change.
I'm happy talking about Galen, and I should probably add that I'm particularly known in my academic hat as an expert on Galen, and particularly his reception of his writings and his medical ideas in the Islamic world. So I'm happy to focus on Galen, and particularly his engagement with Plato the philosopher's cosmological dialogue, the Timaeus, which contains a lot of interesting information about the body's relationship relationship to the cosmos? And also this question, and who is most qualified to treat the body? Is it the philosopher or is it the doctor? And so this is something that I'm very interested in. I just wrote a book about it. And so I'm happy to talk about Galen and the Timaeus.
So who is Galen?
So Galen is a Greek-speaking physician from Pergamum, which is now in Izmir, Turkey. So he comes from quite an aristocratic background. So he's a well-to-do individual who did not need to go into medicine to make a living. So he comes from landed wealth. So his father owned a lot of property. He is an individual that studied philosophy as a young man. And his father, Nikon, supposedly was sent dreams by the healing god Asclepius that asked him to turn Galen away from the study of philosophy to medicine. And so Galen is an individual that had a very long career that spanned across the ancient Mediterranean. So he's had, his home was in Pergamum, what is nowadays modern Turkey, but he spent time in Rome. He traveled to Egypt and Cyprus, and he's really known for writing a very massive body of writing about treatment and health, philosophy, and about how medicine and philosophy are two areas that are complementary, that shouldn't be seen as separate areas of expertise. He wrote a treatise that says that the best doctor is also a philosopher. So that's really emblematic of his manifesto as a doctor.
Okay. What year? When was he?
Thank you. So he is from the 2nd century CE. So he is in the Roman Empire. So he brags about being a personal physician to Marcus Aurelius, the emperor, and Commodus, his son. He is, you know, living and working as a Greek speaker in the Roman world order.
Okay. Okay, cool. So the question that you like mentioned a couple of times about like philosophers versus doctors. Mm. I'm like so interested about that. Can you tell us more?
Sure. And I think that it really goes back to that. Unlike today, there's no modern licensing board about like who a modern external board that grants individuals authority about who can practice medicine, who can treat the body. So it's much more regimented today versus anybody in antiquity could claim to have expertise on healing. So, you know, even before Galen's lifetime, there was a struggle or a competition between doctors and philosophers who were arguing to potential patients that they were the best person to go to if you were sick and healing. So the philosopher arguing that I'm not only able to prescribe the right diet to balance your body, but I also can treat your soul. So your soul and body being mutually influential on one another versus the doctor saying, you know, we're the ones that are experts on the body. If you really care about your physical health, you should come to us and that we have various treatments. So there's no governmental organization saying that you need to have a certain set of knowledges to become a doctor or to become a healer. So you have not only philosophers and doctors, but also gymnastic trainers arguing that you should go to them. You also have people who are considered outside of even these more learned spheres, such as midwives and root cutters and pharmacists, who are all claiming that they are able to provide healing care. So this is where we see this competition between philosophers and doctors about which patient should go to them and that they're able to provide the best care.
If you had lived back then, who would you have seen?
It really depends on the case. So it depends on the complaint and it depends on the case. So there is, Galen is quite an intriguing doctor or an example because he's a blend of both, in the sense that he's saying that philosophy gives you the logical training to be able to differentiate between different diseases, different categories of having a more analytical approach, as well as having the experience, the practical and technical proficiency. So he was an amazing anatomist. You know, he performed these horrific experiments on animals. So I must say that, you know, I do not advocate or glorify what he did, but he performed public vivisections of animals to show to his audience in Rome his technical proficiency, that he was able to open up the skull of a pig and to show which part of the brain, if you damage it, causes loss of voice. So these very kind of horrific experiments, but being able to perform them on animals without any anesthesia, you know, struggling out in the public, is a display of macho-ness, you know, which I do not valorize at all, but also his technical proficiency. So, you know, there's a lot about Galen I do not like, but I think certainly the appeal of having somebody who's going to think more broadly about causation, and also somebody who has the technical proficiency, who treated a lot of patients, is probably somebody who I would go for.
Yeah. So how did Galen define healing?
Yes. So Galen had a very individualistic idea of health. He believed that everybody had their own balance or temperament. So he is working within a humoral framework. So believing that the body is composed of four humors. So blood, yellow bile, black bile, and phlegm. And that everybody has their own unique mixture of this humoral component. So somebody might have more blood than they have black bile. So his idea was that we need to get you back to your normal, the normal that is specific to your body. You know, and he also believes that your age, where you live, your diet, the seasons of the year all have an impact on how the humors in your body are mixed. And so is trying to find the balance that is right for you. So he doesn't have a one size fits all idea of health, but it's very individualistic. So he's trying to find your balance.
Yeah. That sounds a lot like Ayurveda.
It is. Yes. And Ayurveda, and there's interactions with Ayurveda and Greco-Roman medicine, particularly there's Ayurveda classical pre-Greco-Roman ideas, but Ayurveda was profoundly shaped by Greco-Roman ideas through its interaction with the Islamic world. So a lot of Galen's ideas actually entered into Ayurvedic practice in the Middle Ages. So there's also a practice in India called Unani Tib, which means Greek medicine, okay, which is very much kind of conversant with Ayurvedic practice, but it's also importing and incorporating into Ayurveda these Greek humoral ideas too as well.
Okay, that's so fascinating. Yeah. How has studying these things like changed the way that you think about healing?
Yeah, I think I find Galen's idea of health being very individualistic, very appealing. This idea that everybody has their right balance or their own nature, and finding that balance for yourself is something that I find attractive from reading ancient medicine. I think, or reading particularly Galen, versus I think there is this more kind of one size fits all approach to Western biomedicine. And, you know, part of it is because just the lack of time for practitioners, that they just don't have the time to do these very individualistic workups. There's only so much that you can do with blood work on it. So it's usually you take this treatment because it's worked with X amount of people during a clinical study. But this idea that, you know, there's different health norms for everyone, and it's about trying to get as close to that norm for you. And that's what constitutes health. I find that, something that is coming from Galen, who was very influential in perpetuating that idea, not only in Europe when his works were read there, but also in the Islamicate world and elsewhere. So I think that idea of individualistic health is really appealing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's something that, like, I've been learning about Ayurveda recently, and that's something that feels really appealing to me about that too. Just like that it's normal for different people to, you know, exhibit wellness in different ways. And, absolutely. And I think that's also like, I'm not like super into astrology, but like I follow it a little bit. And I think that once I started learning more about it, that was a really fascinating thing too. Just like this idea that everyone has their own different like star chart and everything. Mm-hmm, is that part of the like cosmology like that you were talking about before?
Absolutely. So this goes back to, at least thinking about the Greco-Roman tradition, this idea that the stars are the cosmos, what they would say is the supralunary, so above the moon kind of realm. So the planets and the fixed stars have an influence on health, is something that we see in the Hippocratic corpus. So sometimes you read these texts and they'll say, okay, you're a doctor, you're going into a new a new location for even thinking about diseases, you should think about kind of like, what are the planetary alignment? You know, what is the water in the location? So this idea that there's so many different factors that influence health is something that you see in the Hippocratic Corpus. You see Galen picking this up. Some of these works of Galen where he talks about, you know, different astrological signs and about how this might have a different impact on the course of your fever, you know? So this idea that somehow the zodiac may have a influence, whether through rays or some other means of influencing health. So certainly that is there in the Greek sources.
When you like think about that or like teach about that or research about that, like, do you think like, oh, this is wrong, but it's interesting to study? Or like, how do you think about that?
Yeah. So I think the more and more I study about ancient medicine, I think about how medicine is culturally contingent. You know, so I don't try to kind of impose my own cultural views on the past and to promote that. And that's certainly something that I try to teach my students, that every culture has its own idea of health. So it's not within us to say whether this is right or wrong, that it, and medicine or medicines, I like to think about medicines in the plural, is something that is always plural. There's different ways of healing and health. So I do not try to say that, you know, that is wrong. You know, I don't know, it could provide some measure of relief, you know, and it's not to me to try to rationalize it with my own kind of Western training. I don't believe in that. You know, medicine is a cultural constructed thing. Medical facts aren't uncovered. You know, they're made and shaped by different cultural views. And I think it's not within my right to say what is wrong. I think if it's done with the patient's consent, then I think consent is a big issue that, and some of these procedures in the past were not, done with patient's consent. And that's where I have a huge issue. But if you're aware of your health choices, and even if you, and hopefully you have a choice, it is up to you, whether you're a patient in the past or today, to navigate your own health course.
Yeah, I love that.
How did Galen influence modern medicine?
Modern medicine, you mean Western biomedicine? Or?
Yes. Sorry, okay, From now on, that's, I will.
Yeah, it's okay. It's one of those things. It's again, that I always like the pluralism of yes, of medicine, and that, you know, while Western biomedicine is certainly the hegemonic medical discourse of the US, it's not the only one. So I think Galen's idea of using analytical thinking, so this, you know, really marriage of philosophical thinking, observation, and skill, this kind of like tripod of things, as being really a cornerstone of the ideal doctor even today. So I think a lot of Galen's ideas about humoral theory or even the origin of diseases isn't something that has persisted to this day, but I think rather his model of what the ideal physician should be is something that persists today. And so Galen is modeling his ideal on his conception of Hippocrates. So a lot of our understanding of Hippocrates, this, you know, earlier figure who's often called as the so-called father of Western medicine, which I don't like using that term, because Hippocrates is by no means a Western thinker, or the West doesn't get to claim Hippocrates as their own. Certainly this idea that a doctor should have technical training, so being able to do dissections and anatomy, should be able to distinguish between different diseases. And this is where he advocates analytical training through logic, as well as being ethical, so also having ethics too as well. So I think these observations, having experience, having that analytical training, and having that practice, that tripod of things, is really what informs still the standard of what a modern doctor should be.
Yeah. And you talked about like his theory of diseases, and is that that connected to like the humoral concept?
Yes, absolutely. I think that humoral theory, at least in Western biomedicine, is no longer adhered to. So this idea that all diseases can be reduced to a temperamental or humoral imbalance is not something that's particularly, quote, mainstream. So that's part of it. And also, I think if we're talking about ethics, well, part of his ethical positioning that you need to have this philosophical training and to always approach your patients and try to do and intervene for their betterment. The ethics kind of work the other way, like his what I was talking about, animal experimentation, and also issues about consent are something that thankfully do not feature in or, you know, hopefully don't feature in most biomedical practices. But yeah, I think it's humoral theory, the idea that fever may be caused by excess black bile, or that bloodletting will help balance your humoral temperament. Treatments modeled on that humoral framework are, you know, really fell out of favor in, you know, as late as the 19th century. They were still, that framework was still operative in at least Western European context. You know, that humoral framework is still operative in parts of the world today. So I don't want to make any claim that it's completely obsolete.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, like when, how you talk about Galen, like distinguishing like the three legs, you know, like being, like having that sort of understanding of disease, but also the technical skill, yep, you know, and then the observation. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that feels very relevant. Like there, you know, especially in doing this podcast, there are so many different ways to think about healing and health. And
absolutely.
And, you know, when it boils down to it, it almost doesn't matter as much, like if it's true, right? Like much as if it just like informs like good decisions about treatment and like makes the patient feel.
Absolutely. Okay, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's important for for a patient to feel like they're an agent of their own health.
Yeah.
And I think that certainly Western biomedical practices can render patients feeling like, you know, like really like that, the root of that term patients, like completely passive and not agential and being able to navigate. And this is, you know, in my way, a failing of certain Western biomedical practices of not having patients feeling like they're in control or contributing to their own health outcomes, you know. So I think that is something that is lost. I think that's something that is being acknowledged. There is actually a lot of different programs in medical schools that are trying to integrate humanistic training. So whether it's teaching courses like ancient medicine or doing creative writing or other creative things to try to create empathy and to gain perspective on how patients might feel about being just dictated that you need to do this and not being brought in or even respecting that health can look very different to different patients.
Yeah. What I'm wondering if there are any like particularly interesting practices, like therapeutic practices that Galen prescribed, or maybe, you know, that other medicines like prescribed that you can share with us.
Yeah, sure. I think the most notorious, and this is under the category that I'm glad that this does not longer get practiced, is probably the practice of uterine fumigation. So there was this idea, you know, that predates Galen, and it really comes from a time before there was any dissection of human bodies. And I should say that in the ancient Greco-Roman world, like the actual dissection of human bodies only took place for about 100 years and like 300 BCE Alexandria. So Galen never dissected a human body. He only dissected animals. But there, before there was knowledge that the uterus was anchored down by ligaments and muscles, there was the belief that certain uterine complaints or gynecological complaints were caused by a uterus roaming around your body because as a woman, you needed to, you needed to get pregnant and have that uterus anchored. So it's a sort of patriarchal conception of women's health that, you know, a healthy woman is a pregnant woman. Yeah. So there is this idea that, okay, so if you're a woman is not pregnant and she's having these uterine complaints, what you can do is have her stand over hot substances, burning substances that are sweet smelling, with the idea that the uterus would be attracted to these sweet scents and kind of move back down into your lower abdomen. So even Galen, he was reading these works that were written in Alexandria that benefit from dissection, he still recommends them. even though he knows that the uterus is anchored down by ligaments. So this is kind of one of those pervasive, you know, cultural biases that shape medicine, that you still have this idea that uterine fumigation, and I know that that's creeped back a little bit into modern, you know, modern culture with goop. And,
yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, fumigation.
But like, I think that that's like a really interesting place where, from my understanding, like vaginal steaming, it's like this same practice, right? But there's like two different philosophies. Like what you're talking about, uterine fumigation is this other philosophy, right? This other reason, this other understanding of why it's like to get this wandering uterus back. Whereas like vaginal steaming, to me, like what I understand comes from a more like gentle, you know, feminine, maybe like philosophy or place.
No, sure. I think it's certainly the, in the ancient sources, this is, the practices undergirding this are very patriarchal. Like this idea that a woman's health is reduced down to her womb, and, her womb is wandering around the body because, women are, you know, I guess this idea that women have an irrational creature in them that, you know, needs to be pregnant and then can cause health complaints if it's not anchored with a baby. And this idea that completely depriving women of agency and just reducing down to them as a womb that is hungry for sweet smelling scents. So there is, you know, there's everything that's wrong, kind of like the, there's a lot to unpack there. So I think this is not what you're reading on Goop,
right?
But this is certainly a practice that happened that has a very patriarchal bias kind of undergirding that.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any other ones?
Are there, well, there's also,
yeah. Are there any that you have tried or that you're like, oh, like this, that should come back. Like that's a shame that that's gone.
No, I think, you know, the more like thinking about things that have tried is more just, I think the idea, you know, particularly in Galen, that surgery, because this is pre-anesthetic, that surgery was very painful, that most of his therapies deal with food interventions, which I think is a very timely thing. So I like cooking. I cook a lot of Indian food. I'm South Asian. So, you know, there are a lot of the spices and a lot of the ingredients here, not only on Ayurvedic, but also kind of Greek medicine. So this idea, it's not something that I think I particularly, you know, think very hard about, but I know that there's another rationale kind of operating in some of these recipes that is beyond that just because they taste good,
yeah.
You know? So I think, you know, I'm more open to herbal remedies, but I'm also kind of quite aware that I think the interactions with other medications is something that's underplayed. And also there's also an environmental impact that isn't really discussed as much about, you know, herbal medicine and environmental influence here. So, you know, I have a lot of feelings, you know, about these practices, but most of the ancient medical practices are horrific, I think, particularly for women. And it's depressing actually how much things haven't changed. You know, if we're talking about I think about an object like the speculum,
yeah,
that has, its design has not changed since Greco-Roman antiquity. And it was not designed for women's comfort, you know, at all. So that's the shocking thing, that there's no, it's not because it's a good model. It's just because it hasn't like been refined with women patients' input or kind of comfort in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's such a good point. Maybe after I finish this project, we'll do like a speculum revision.
Yeah,
protest.
Absolutely. No. I know that there are some individuals who are thinking about redesigning it. So I have a friend who's a gynecologist.
That's awesome.
who's talking about like that there are certain models from, you know, whether it's trans practitioners who are advocating,
yeah,
it, or kind of women practitioners. So there seems to be some evidence, but a lot of these, you know, the tools around women health had just have not changed because, you know, they are not the ancients of their own health, and women have been reduced down to objects of medicalization.
Wow. Yeah. Gosh, that I feel like we could go into like a whole other separate.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I know it's like Galen and then going into kind of gynecology, but you know, that's a, you know, pre-modern women health is kind of, you know, it's not my particular area of research, but it's an area of interest,
yeah,
for me.
Totally. What do you think is the greatest lesson or insight that you've learned by studying ancient medicine?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And this is the point that I'm trying to get across from my students in my course, Ancient Medicine, that medicine isn't objective, that it is culturally constructed and influenced, that you should always be suspicious of anyone who claims that their facts are objective. You know, science is not uncovered, it's made, it's culturally specific. So I think studying these practices and realizing the different societal and cultural influences that inform them has helped me to realize as a patient myself that there are different agendas and ideology at work. You know, when I'm a patient, whether it's my pain as a woman patient not being taken as seriously as if I were a male patient, or the type of over-medicalization that might be ascribed. So this is what it helps for me to understand, you know, as I journey as a patient, about how medicine really is in dialogue with different cultural influences, and to realize that, you know, and that not to hold things up to a certain pedestal, and to really kind of interrogate, you know, what's going on here. You know, why is this being labeled as a fact? I'm not saying to reject medical fact at all. You know, I'm not against science by any mean, but just to being reflective about being what's being told to you.
Yeah, that it's as much a part of culture, the current culture, as anything else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Well, this has been really fun and fascinating and gone lots of places I wasn't expecting. So.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. We're kind of gone with the fumigation. We're like, we're out here talking about wandering uteruses.
So funny. Where can people find you?
Sure. So I have my own departmental webpage, so they can find my email. They can just go Eileen Doss at University of Michigan. I also have a book out that is just published this month at Cambridge University Press that talks about Galen and his cosmic, you know, treatment of the body and the reception of this idea of medicine and its relationship to philosophy in the Middle East. So this is out. So you can buy that on Amazon, you know.
What is the title?
It's called Galen and the Arabic Reception of Plato's Timaeus. So it's published by Cambridge University Press. It was out this month in print, and you can buy it on Amazon too as well.
Okay. Congratulations. That's really exciting.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you wanted to add? Anything else that you thought of before we talked or as we were talking?
I just encourage, you know, with everything, just to anybody, you know, thinking about ancient medicine, is these practices aren't that ancient. That this is the surprising thing about my students, that a lot of the same discussions and controversies endure, that there is roots on that. And studying the past really helps to kind of understand and bring light on present topics, you know. So, you know, I encourage people with interest in ancient medicine to kind of explore it. You'll be surprised about how little has changed and about some of the same conversations are being had.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Eileen.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me to, you know, just have a chat about ancient medicine and Galen. Forms, flames, and the
flakes of flames. Thank you for listening. You can learn more about Eileen by clicking the links in the show notes. I'll put a link to her book there. Eileen is also doing a free online workshop about ancient medicine and the Middle East next month through the Society for Ancient Medicine and Pharmacology. If you're interested in learning more, you should definitely check it out. I put a link to that event in the show notes. A transcript of this episode can be found on the website timetohealpodcast.wordpress.com. Braille version is also available upon request. Thanks to Jesse Blake Rendell for the gorgeous music. Thanks, as always, to my talented friend Erin Drew, who helps produce this podcast. Check out her business, On Brand Voice, for innovative copywriting and voiceover solutions. Please subscribe to this podcast to get alerts about new episodes. We also have a newsletter that you can sign up for on the website. You can follow the pod on Instagram and Twitter under the handle Time to Heal Podcast. We also have a Facebook group, which you can join so you can connect with the community of listeners. Finally, if you have a history of suffering, this is your time to heal.